listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
We continue our NFL draft blitz today with Southern Steve's Cowboys. Dallas has the 10th pick in the draft, and last week, Caesars Sportsbook by William Hill projected Jerry's boys to have 9.5 wins and finish atop the NFC East. We'll see what Danny Dimes has to say about that. Stephen A., before we get into the debate, though, you had something you wanted to say.
Max Kellerman, in regards to our conversation about Jake Paul, and I brought up Nate Robinson. Y'all can put me up on the split screen because I want to see Max and Molly here. I got a source close to Nate Robinson. I would like to read to you what that source told me. Quote, Nate walked out the arena, realized he was not well trained, he was not trained well, apologized for not listening, and collected a little over $2 million for that fiasco. He's fine. Working on a TV show. They are trying to get him to fight in a rematch. If you can believe that. Floyd, Money Mayweather, wants to train him if he agrees. Crazy, but true. I have told him not to do it. But if he does, it has to be for more money. And he needs to train with a pro and for a very long time.
Stephen A., you get knocked out that way, you collect $2 million, you think you're getting more for the rematch? Even getting a rematch?
Well, let me say this to you. I think it's possible because of Jake Paul's elevating popularity that Nate Robinson could get more. I would strongly advise Nate Robinson never to go into that ring with Jake Paul again. Never. Not that kind of knockout. Not that
kind. You know what we got now, though? Celebrity trainers are coming. Here comes Floyd, and how long before someone hops in the other corner?
No, he doesn't need to do that. He doesn't need to do it. You know, I never laughed and I didn't joke about Nate Robinson. I was worried about him because I love the kid, but he doesn't need to go back in that ring against that man. He needs to stay the hell away from him.
Interesting info. I'd love to debate what's your price to get knocked out if you would get knocked out for $2 million, but we'll stay focused on the Cowboys here. Stephen A., I will start with you. Over under 9.5 wins for Dallas.
I'm going to go over. I think they're playing in the NFC East. I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to win at least 10 games.
Over. Okay,
I think Dallas Cowboys. Listen. The fall will be precipitous. The fall will come. Ain't like they're going to win a Super Bowl.
There we go.
You know what I'm saying? Ain't going to win a Super Bowl. But can they win the division?
Jack's back.
Winning 10, 11, hell, maybe even 12 games? Sure. They could do that. And then flop. Absolutely. Matter of fact, I fully expect it. Philadelphia Eagles rebuilding. Giants, not ready yet. Daniel Jones, not ready yet. Watch the Redskins. I think Fitzpatrick pickup is a big deal for them. Their defense is real. I think they'd be the number one threat to the Cowboys within the division. But with Dak Prescott back with that offense, particularly if they draft an elite, somebody elite on the defensive side of the ball, I definitely think the Dallas Cowboys are winning more than 9.5 games. I think they're going to win a minimum of 10 games, probably 11.
I'm taking the under, like the under with prejudice. The under, like, with an exclamation point. Stephen A., 9.5 is the over-under for the Cowboys? Let me tell you something. Well, they're going to have Dak all year. I remember the last time Dak played a full season. He was excellent. And by the way, the Cowboys' offense, by some measures, was the best in the NFC. And they were playing behind a dominant offensive line, the best in the business. And they won 8 games in one of the worst divisions we've ever seen and didn't make the playoffs. And now let's look at it. The offensive line has gotten significantly worse. That's what they hung their hat on back then. The NFC East has gotten better. The Giants have gotten better, and Washington has gotten better. And before we write the Eagles off, let's just remember that this team has responded to every quarterback not named Carson Wentz, at least as well as they responded to Wentz, meaning they played and their record was at least the same when they played for a non-Wentz quarterback as for Wentz. So I'm not so sure you write the Eagles off in that sad sack division. Okay? 9.5. So you're taking 10 games? I don't think that Dallas would be lucky to go 500. Lucky to go 500. The Giants' offensive line has improved. Daniel Jones is in year 3, this time with Saquon Barkley. They have a whole bunch of weapons on offense, including a wideout who's certainly a number one when he's on the field when they signed Galladay. They have tight ends. They have multiple receivers. No, the Giants' defense is good. No, the Cowboys, 9.5 wins. If you can't make the playoffs in a lesser division behind a dominant offensive line, I'm supposed to think that you're going to win double-digit games in a better division when the offensive line has gotten worse? And Stephen, that's to say nothing of Mike McCarthy. Like, say whatever you want about Jason Garrett. Mike McCarthy couldn't hold his job in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. As soon as they brought in another coach, they haven't stopped winning 13 games a year. They had a losing record with McCarthy by the end. No. I think that's a good bet. Take the under on Dallas.
I don't blame you for that because they've shown at any time their expectations are placed on their shoulders, they're allergic to prosperity. We understand that. They're the Cowboys. This is what they do. We get that. But I think in this particular season, particularly with Dak Prescott getting the money that he just got, combined with the fact that Ezekiel Elliott and those boys suffered without him, I think that the Dallas Cowboys would be hyped about this season, having Dak Prescott back and ready to go. And I think that's something that would bode well for them. That's number one. Again, number two, the NFC least is what it is. It's not that great of a division. We understand that. And I think by default, you're talking about them winning in all likelihood 4 or 5 of their 6 divisional games. And so I pay attention to that as well. And I think that when you combine all of that with the fact that if the defense gives you anything, you know what the offense is capable of giving you with Dak Prescott behind center. And I think that can definitely propel them for 10 wins. I think a safe bet would be 10 wins. I think 11 or 12 might be pushing it a little bit, but I do think it's possible.
I think I know what's going on here, Stephen A., and it doesn't have to do with any of this analysis. I know what it is. You just want the Cowboys fans' hopes elevated as much as possible because you don't want them falling off a second floor window, right? You want them falling off the 100th floor. I understand.
Right.
But that's what's going
but
on.
But I do believe what I'm saying. I mean, well, I do believe what I'm saying. You're absolutely right. I mean, both things can be true. I do want their fall to be hard. I mean, I want it to be hard. I don't want them falling off the curb. I don't want them falling off the first or second floor. I want them plummeting. I want them crash landing. Absolutely true. But I really, really do believe they're going to win at least 10 games.
If they go 4-2 in the division, that's an if. They look like a 500 team to me in that division. I don't know that they're going to sweep the Giants or Washington. I would think those are kind of 1-1 series, and they got to sweep the Eagles to go 4-2. And they better be 500 against the rest of the league.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, if they do all that, they're a 9-win team. That's still the under. I don't see them going over 500 against the rest of the league and over 500 against their own division. Mm-hmm. No, I think the over-under on the Cowboys should be 8 games, and I think I would take the under.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Meanwhile, Trevor Lawrence addressed criticism over his previous comments about motivation in a Sports Illustrated article in a series of 3 tweets Saturday. The projected number one overall pick tweeted in part, "It seems as if people are misreading my sentiment. I am internally motivated. I love football as much or more than anyone. It is a huge priority in my life, obviously. I am driven to be the best I can be and to maximize my potential and to win." Max, do you think Lawrence needed to clarify his earlier comments here.
I do, but first let me say, Stephen A., about the last segment we were talking about over-under wins for the Cowboys. I did my calculations based on a 16-game schedule, as was obvious, but they're going to play 17 games. I just want to say I would make the over-under in that case 8.5 for the Cowboys, and I would still take the under. Just wanted to get that out there. Trevor Lawrence. Yes, Trevor Lawrence had to clarify. Look, we in the media ask questions of draft picks, right? Of potential draft picks. And as what we're really looking for them to do is go off book. And as soon as they go off book, we go, we got something. Grist for the mill, and we talk about it. That's why those guys don't go off book. That's why if you want to hear a boring interview, talk to a player who's about to get drafted up high. He's not going to say anything that messes with his draft status. Now, Trevor Lawrence is secure enough that he's going first no matter what. That he's secure enough he can go a little off book and clean it up later. But I think it did need some clarification. Look, if Justin Fields had said that, he'd be a fourth round pick. all of a sudden he's in the fourth round. If Trey Lance said it, they may have tried to make him a wideout. Like, who knows? But Trevor Lawrence felt comfortable enough going one overall. Everyone knows that as a presumptive number one overall pick, that he can say, look, this is really how I feel about things. Now, I thought he's talking more about process versus result than he doesn't love football. But my eyebrows raised as many did, and we want to know some answers. So, yeah, he had to now clarify what he – that's why he did it. That's why he clarified. It's like, people are questioning my commitment to football. I got to make sure I communicate now exactly how I feel to clean that up. And he did, and I'm satisfied with his explanation, but he needed to do it.
I don't think he did. He certainly didn't need to do it for me. I got exactly what he was saying, and I think that Dan Orlovsky did a great job of coming on the air and articulating what he had seen when he read the entire article. So let's take that into consideration and understand that that's worth something as well. He's driven to be the best. What he doesn't do is walk around with this chip on his shoulder, feeling that he needs to concern himself with others, proving them wrong in terms of the naysayers. That's what he was trying to say. And when you've won a national championship, when you've been in the playoffs all 3 years, you've been in college football, not to mention two national title games, I think that it's clear with a 39-3 record that this guy wants to win. And so when I look at it from that perspective, I never overreacted to it. Now, we say if it were Justin Fields, you joked about him being picked in the fourth round. That's a great joke, but it has a lot of truth to it because obviously he would have been judged differently because he's black and playing the quarterback position. And it seems on far too many occasions that when it comes to the black quarterback, they look for an abundance of reasons not to sign them or not to draft them highly, as opposed to just accepting them on face value for what they see these guys do on the football field and taking them. But Trevor Lawrence is not black. Matter of fact, he's white. And not only is he white, he's 6'6" with a beautiful arm, beautiful skill set, and a winning pedigree. So guess what? He can get away with sitting up there and saying, you know what, I'm good. Everything is all right. I'm not worried about a thing. And he's not going to be judged harshly. There was nothing that was going to change his draft status. There was nothing that was going to make the Jacksonville Jaguar fans, down on him. Wasn't going to make Urban Meyer down on him or anything like that. He had absolutely nothing to worry about because he isn't Justin Fields. He isn't Trey Lance. He isn't Deshaun Watson. He isn't a plethora of these other quarterbacks who happen to be black that have to worry about being stigmatized in such a fashion. You know, obviously, he's a white individual with exceptional skills. And in this world, that's all you got to worry about.
Well, and he's also not Mac Jones, meaning he's also mobile.
No DUIs.
Yep. And also, he is the total package. Like, Mac Jones can't say something like that. It doesn't – like, yes, the joke I was making was about black quarterbacks and the way they were treated for years and years and still are in some respects. In terms of draft status, in terms of trying to turn them into other positions so they're not the leaders and not the stars. Warren Moon, you have to go to another country to play football if you wanted to play quarterback and you were African-American back in the day. So, yes, I was referring to that. But you can be a white quarterback and not be the total package, and comments like that can also hurt your draft status. Not in the case of Trevor Lawrence, which is why Stephen A., It's good that he made the comments. What that shows me is no. Don't get it twisted about me. No, if you have any questions now about my commitment to football, I don't want anyone out there thinking I'm not committed to football. This is what Jacksonville is getting. I'm totally committed. But it did, even if it was misinterpreted by the media at first, it became a big enough story that he obviously wanted to clear it up. And I think that shows good things about his level of commitment to being great and to wanting to put the right foot forward as the face of his franchise, because he's going to be the face of that franchise.
Well, let's be clear. I'm not faulting him for clarifying and providing an explanation. I'm just saying he didn't need to, not in my estimation. I'm not saying that he was wrong for doing it, but he didn't need to.
Well, he
didn't
need to.
That's all I mean by that.
He didn't need to in terms of it affecting his draft status. That's true. He was going to be picked number one if he never said another word. But did he need to in a larger sense? Yeah, I think he did. And by the way, part of being a leader is communicating clearly. Part of being the face of a franchise is communicating clearly.
That's fair.
He's like, I'm not starting this off on the wrong foot. You got the wrong
guy. It definitely didn't hurt him.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
The Nets lost a close win to the Heat thanks to a Bam Adebayo buzzer beater. But, guys, that wasn't the major loss. It was Kevin Durant leaving in the first quarter with a left thigh contusion. Coach Steve Nash says Durant will be reevaluated today. Stephen A., can Kyrie and Harden get to the finals without having KD?
No. I've said it on many occasions. I'll say it again. Start off the show saying it. I'll say it again. It's not going to happen because of the way the Philadelphia 76ers look and the way the Milwaukee Bucks look. Harden and Kyrie are great. Kyrie is box office, as far as I'm concerned. He's the number one attraction for me. He's my favorite player to watch this year. He's been an absolute showstopper. He's just nasty, no question. But come playoff time, when you're preparing for a best 4 out of 7, I'm thinking along the lines of the size and the defensive prowess that both Philadelphia and Milwaukee bring to the table. And I'm saying that the X factor in it all would be KD, because neither team has any answer for Kevin Durant, like no one else in the NBA has an answer for Kevin Durant. He's simply that lethal. And I think that with him on the court, the Brooklyn Nets obviously go to the finals and should be favorites to win the chip. Without him, I don't think they get out of the East. I just look at it, and even though I like what they've been doing, Joe Harris has been doing, Landry Shamet dropped 30 the other day. I like what he's been doing. I'm just looking at them collectively, and I'm saying it still comes down to the absence of Kevin Durant. If you don't have him, you don't have a replacement for him. And that's why I don't believe Philadelphia or Milwaukee, the Brooklyn Nets would not get by both of them. I just don't see it.
I might not make them the favorites, but I can't say they can't win without KD, because I saw them win a lot without KD. Stephen A., they went from being a team before the Harden trade, I thought, not enough. Like KD and Kyrie, I thought, what you're saying about these other teams in the East, maybe they could do it, but I might like the depth of the other teams a little bit more. Once they got Harden, they had no KD. It's like they couldn't lose. They basically got to the best record in the East without KD, with just Harden and Kyrie, and sometimes it was just James Harden. Even when they go on to the West Coast and play the Blazers and the Jazz. No, and look, are they going to have matchup problems with Embiid? Well, who's not? But you're still counting by twos with Embiid for the most part. If he's getting three, I mean, he can shoot the three, but given the number of threes he's taking, he's getting three the hard way. He's not bombing from three. They would still have chances in that matchup. Absolutely, especially with Joe Harris, who's actually the best shooter on the team. And they have bigs who can play, like big bodies who can play. Of course, not a match for Embiid, but Claxton and Blake and guys. They have DeAndre. They have some bodies they can throw at him. Sure. Now, what you're saying is with KD, they win. No doubt. If everyone's healthy on the Nets, including KD, ain't no one stopping them, including the Lakers, given the way they improved on defense and the way I saw Harden and Kyrie dominate the league without KD. So you add KD, I'm with you. But even without KD, they're one of the front runners in the division. Them, the Bucks, and the Sixers. It's going to be one of those three teams, most likely. Yeah, they can do it without them.
Okay. We shall see. Best 4-7. They get an opportunity to prepare for you. We've watched Miami beat them. We beat Milwaukee. We talked about bubble play, but Miami's perimeter shooting basically sealed the deal. And we know that that Kyrie and James Harden are capable of doing that. But I just think that when you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, according to Joel Embiid, and you'll see some of my interview with him tonight on SportsCenter with Stephen A. leading into the game tonight.
Stephen A.? Where's the interview?
ESPN. It'll be on ESPN tonight on my pregame show, SportsCenter with Stephen A. at 7 o'clock. Then tomorrow the interview will air in its entirety on Stephen A.'s World on ESPN+. But as he mentions, we don't have one Defensive Player of the Year candidate. We got two. In me and Ben Simmons. So, I mean, when I think about it from that perspective, and I think about how formidable Joel Embiid has been with the shooters that he's been surrounded with the way that Doc Rivers and his staff have Tobias Harris and Seth Curry and others playing, I just think it's too much of an ask for Brooklyn to come out of the Eastern Conference without KD. And I'm going to reiterate, I think Julius Randle right now, the way that he has been balling with the New York Knicks, I think that he's an MVP candidate, even though not a top two one. And I think that when you look at Tom Thibodeau, I think he's a coach of the year. And if the Knicks make the playoffs and the Nets don't make the finals, the New York Knicks will be considered a success story and the Brooklyn Nets will be considered a failure.
This is what I have to say about that, Stephen A. I saw James Harden take a Daryl Morey put together team and a Mike D'Antoni coached team. I saw James Harden take a way undermanned team, no Chris Paul, to seven games against KD, Steph, Clay, Dre, everybody. And without Chris Paul, they still had a chance to win the game.
That's
an historically bad shooting night.
That's not accurate. Chris Paul got hurt in game five.
Yeah.
Okay? They lost game six and then lost game seven.
Right, but I'm talking about game seven. I'm saying
Chris Paul was there.
Oh, yeah, I understand. No, I get it. But I'm saying he played without Chris Paul, had an all-time bad shooting night, Harden and the team. At one point was 0 for 27 from three. 0 for 27, lost by single digits to that Warriors team. No one came close to sniffing that Warriors team except that Houston team that almost beat them. Now, I saw Harden do that, right? Okay, you mean to tell me Harden with Kyrie Irving, if those guys can stay healthy on this team with a shooter like Joe Harris, Shamet, they have guys, has no shot against these Eastern Conference teams? I don't see any Warriors in the East.
I didn't say no shot. I said I'm not picking them to come out of the East.
Can they win? I think they certainly can win. And I think this is what it's going to come down to. If there's no KD, the same thing I've been harping on the whole time. Can James Harden stay James Harden in the playoffs when it matters most? Stephen A., you might be right. Maybe they can't win. But if they really can't win, it's because Harden didn't rise to the occasion. He plays like he played in the regular season. They can definitely win.
I've been told I can have an afro and a hairline and a move 2 feet forward if I went to Hair Club for Men. Anything's possible.
Well, if you want,
I mean, that's
go.
Not what we talk. That's
well,
not what we talking about
can.
Here.
That's
not what we talking. That's not what we talking about here. We talk about who you think is going to come out of the East. It ain't going to be the Nets without KD.
Well, if you want it, go. And if they want it, Harden better go to the equivalent of Hair Club for men.
Oh, yeah,
because if he plays like James Harden, they could beat anybody.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's evolved since Hair Club for Men, but I'm glad we're giving them a lot of press.
I'm going to go.
The Nets big three haven't played. No, you're not. Haven't played together on the court in over 2 months, February 13. They've only played 7 games together the entire season where we've had all three. Gentlemen, more with KD. Let me share this with you. I want to know if you think it's a little shade or not. So appearing on the Million Dollar Worth of Game podcast, Kevin Durant was asked to list his top 5 teammates of all time. So he listed Kyrie, Harden, Steph, Clay, paused, and then said Serge Ibaka. He was immediately challenged about forgetting someone. I'm forgetting someone, Durant asked. After being reminded of Westbrook, he said, oh, expletive, I'm tripping. Russ, yeah, I did forget about Russ. Russ would definitely be in the top 5. I'm glad you called me out on that. Stephen A., was this just an honest mistake by Kate?
No, I don't believe that. And I'm not trying to call Kevin Durant dishonest or anything like that. I'm not trying to attack the brother. I just don't believe him in this particular situation. I don't believe that you forget a Russell Westbrook when you picked Serge Ibaka. Now, if you sat up there and you said Steph, Clay, and Draymond, along with Harden and Kyrie, okay, then that, because you got those two playing with you now, then that makes sense. But to sit up there and to forget Russell Westbrook, but remember Serge Ibaka? Stop it. I don't believe that for 1 second. I believe he knew exactly what he was doing. You know, at the end of the day, let's face reality. Kevin Durant was very, very protective. You know, like the second to last year, he was there with Russell Westbrook. Last year, he was there, he decided to leave. Obviously feeling like he couldn't win a championship without Russell Westbrook, even though he never said so publicly. Certainly a lot of his surrogates and others have said so on his behalf. Many of whom I know personally that told me the same exact thing. Stephen A., you can't get on Kevin Durant when I called it the weakest move that I've ever seen by a superstar for him to go to Golden State. And people misconstrued it for trying to say that I didn't think he could play. No, I was saying he is so great. That's why he should not have joined that squad, because they were a bomb squad without him. But in the end, you know, I was called on many occasions by many people at that particular moment in time when they were saying he wasn't going to win the championship without with Russell Westbrook. You know you couldn't win the championship with Russell Westbrook. That's what they were saying, okay? And then, obviously, when they played against each other the first time, you know, they went at each other, and we saw them talking to each other and all of that other stuff. And KD's grown up, and he's just not going to talk about his former teammate that way. We all know that Russell is real. Russell don't have a fake bone in his body. He's going to tell you what he means if he chooses to, and he's going to mean what he says, and that's fine. But nevertheless, Kevin Durant didn't feel he could win with Russell Westbrook. And Russell Westbrook, from the stories that I was told back then, Russell Westbrook has always been a man's man. Kevin Durant came there as a relative kid, wanted to play video games and stuff like that. And, you know, Russell Westbrook paying his own bills. And, you know, I remember one time somebody joked that KD didn't even know where an ATM machine was, for crying out loud. I don't know whether that's true or not. But these are the kind of things that they were saying to draw the distinction between Russell Westbrook, the grown man, and KD, who was the better player, but still considered a kid. So when you hear stories like that, and then you see how their relationship ultimately ended, there is no question in my mind. And I like that podcast he was on. I've seen those guys before, and I think they do a hell of a job. But I don't give a damn what Kevin Durant said in this particular situation. There is no way in hell that you forgot Russell Westbrook, but remember Serge Ibaka. And Kevin Durant gave it some thought. He thought about it and thought about it. And then, obviously, when they brought up Russell, you know, Kevin Durant said, I appreciate you calling me out for that. You know, you're right. You're right to call me out on that. No way Russ shouldn't have been on the list. Yeah, Russ is on the list. As a matter of fact, I put him ahead of Clay, blah, blah. Well, that's a damn lie, too, because nobody that knows basketball would put Russell Westbrook ahead of Clay Thompson. And Russell Westbrook is going to the Hall of Fame, one of the most athletic point guards to ever play the game. But Klay Thompson, one of the top 5 shooters in the history of basketball, all right? And an elite defender when healthy, and a 3-time champion. No, you're not picking Russell Westbrook ahead of Klay Thompson. So I don't think that's true either.
Hold on. We disagree about a lot with this one. Stephen A., KD was asked on the Million Dollars Worth of Game podcast, name the top 5 teammates, best top 5, best teammates you ever played with, 5, right? He said Kyrie, that came right out. And he said James. And he said Steph. And he said Clay. And then he said, and then he thought for a while, he said Ibaka, right? Now, it sounds suspicious. Hold up, where's Westbrook? As soon as they brought it up, he goes, oh, you're right. Like, you know, you're right to call me out on that. I'm glad. And basically saying, like, because if this passes and no one calls me out on it, now I got to deal with it. It was just an oversight. And then the interesting thing to me was he puts Westbrook fourth. Now, I understand why he put him ahead of Clay. Clay's never been in an MVP conversation. Westbrook has multiple seasons been in an MVP conversation. Clay can shoot in a way, you know, Clay is one of the greatest shooters of all time. Westbrook can't shoot. But Westbrook can do a lot of things that Clay can't do. Like, Westbrook at his best, if he wasn't a five-star player, was 4.5+. Clay has never been considered a five-star player, like an MVP-caliber player. So I understand that. What was interesting to me, the news to me, was he put three dudes definitely ahead of Westbrook because he said, I put him ahead of Clay fourth. Does that mean, I'd like some clarification, Kyrie is one, Harden's two, Steph is three, according to KD? It's just interesting to know how he's thinking about it. But I could see, to me, the news is Westbrook's fourth. He played with Westbrook in Westbrook's prime, right? He puts Kyrie, Harden, and Steph ahead of him. That's not news that he puts Westbrook, when he was an MVP-level player, ahead of Clay. So that's one. Two, can I buy that it was just in, like, he just overlooked them? I can. Stephen A., I've been asked, I mean, present company excluded, right? So I've been asked in the past, who's the best host you've worked with? I'm talking about like in a two-man situation where, or a two-person situation where I was the analyst and the other person was the host. And at different times, I might answer Bob Costas, Jim Lampley, or Brian Kenny, right? And they're all great. But at different times, depending how I'm thinking about it, I just may forget to put one of their names on the list, even if I'm ranking them, right? Or if someone said, you know, great hosts at ESPN who I haven't worked with professionally on a show other than doing sevens, I might say Mike Greenberg. That doesn't mean I don't think there are other guys there. It just means that's what comes to mind in that moment. So when KD got called out on it, I know why you're saying it, Stephen A., because he's thinking about it, and then says, Ibaka, what, you overlooked Westbrook? It's possible. It can happen. And judging by his reaction when they called him on it, the way he cleaned it up, I believe it was just an oversight. The news to me was fourth. He puts Westbrook fourth. He's saying definitively, Kyrie, Harden, and Steph, better players than Westbrook. That's the news to me.
Okay. I don't believe him. I mean, did I stutter? I just want to make sure. Am I stuttering? I mean, did I say something that would leave you confused to my position? I don't believe him. I highlighted the history that involves the both of them. I took into account what I saw because I watched the segment on the podcast. Okay. And I also brought up Serge Ibaka, Kyrie, Harden, Clay, Steph, and Ibaka. Really?
Who doesn't fit?
I mean, really? There's something that's very, very glaring that it doesn't fit. That would be it.
Because he's trying to say Ibaka's better than Westbrook.
What I'm trying to say to you is, that, again, you know, because they asked, I guess what the question was, your top five teammates. Your top five teammates, man. I mean, I wouldn't even bring, listen, I like Ibaka a lot, and I think Ibaka's going to help the Clippers if he gets healthy. He's a champion. I have a lot of respect for Ibaka. But if I had to pick, I would have understood if you picked Draymond over Ibaka. Ibaka? Come on now. All I'm trying to say to you is that I don't buy it. Again, I'm not trying to, listen, I'm only responding to what he did on the podcast. I'm not trying to cause no trouble here, nothing like that. I don't particularly care, to be quite honest with you. Excuse me. Because I don't want to get into anything in regards to Russell or Russell Westbrook or KD. But we know the history. And listen, you also hear a lot. Listen, Russell Westbrook is throwing up triple doubles again, like it's going out of style, which brings me back to what was controversial a couple of weeks ago, which to me had no business being controversial. I didn't mean to say, oh, my goodness, I don't care about his triple doubles who cares? What's the big deal about a triple double? No, I'm saying for him, because he's Russell Westbrook and he's such a great talent. We're accustomed to seeing this. Okay, we got it. You're a walking triple-double. Nobody's been able to do that since Oscar Robertson. You've cemented that reality. We're going to win the championship. We'll come close to it again. Because I don't want to see Russell Westbrook 13 games under 500, even though the Wizards are coming on strong now, and that's no longer the case, and they're trying to get in that play-in. I get all of that. But that's what I was talking about. You don't want to just look at him and his numbers. You want to look at him and say he's in a winning situation, and he has a lot to do with the team winning. When it came to him and KD, he was considered the reason that KD hadn't won a championship.
I think.
And then KD himself validated it by going to play with another point guard in Steph Curry. So I mean, I'm just saying, we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that.
Something
Serge
I'm not going to ignore.
Ibaka, that's the name you come up with. Harden, I'm going to close it by saying this, Max. Kyrie, James Harden, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Serge Ibaka.
Like that old
but you
Sesame
forgot
Street
about
game.
Russell
Which
Westbrook.
One of us isn't
Come
the
on,
same?
Man. Come on, man. You know, I mean, I was born at night, not last night. Come on, man.
Stephen A.
Come on, man.
The news so far today from this conversation is actually that Stephen A. Smith thinks that no one would believe that Westbrook could be put ahead of Klay Thompson. You know, that there is news here, but it's not that he's trying to throw shade at Westbrook. It's KD puts Westbrook fourth on that list, and you put him fifth, apparently.
Yeah, but it's not a big deal to me. What I'm trying to say to you is that even though that's your big deal, to me, I'm just saying that Klay Thompson, we look at Klay and his shooting ability, but, you know, we pay attention. You got to pay attention. Also, he's an elite defender. At 6'7", he's capable of guarding at least three positions. We know what he is as a shooting guard slash small forward. The dude is one of the elite shooters, top five as far as I'm concerned, that we've ever seen in NBA history. Klay Thompson is that kind of sniper. That's why I would pick him. I can rely on him from the perimeter more than I can rely on Russell Westbrook. I can rely on him on the defensive end more than I can rely on Russell Westbrook. And I can rely on him from the free throw line more than I can rely on Russell Westbrook. Yeah, he's more athletic, but in terms of efficiency, I think that Klay Thompson's ahead of Russell Westbrook.
I'm just saying.
But
I'm not
knocking Russell Westbrook. I'm just saying I would put him ahead. The issue to me is not that big between those two. The issue to me is the fact that you said you forgot about Russell Westbrook, but you remembered Serge Ibaka.
So why would he clean it up right as soon as they bring it up?
Because he knows this is going to happen. What's happening with me and you now?
But he knew it when he did it that this was going to happen.
Okay.
So why clean it up?
Sometimes my people might do it on purpose. You know that, Max. You talk about people doing stuff all the time. I don't know the reason. I'm not pretending to know the reason. All I'm trying to say, and I tell Kevin Durant to his face, and I have nothing but respect for him, but I tell him to his face, hell no, I don't believe that was an accident that he forgot.
You Serge ever forget
Ibaka,
something you
but
should
But you forget
know.
Russell Westbrook, but you remember Serge Ibaka again.
Yeah, it can happen.
I was born at night, not last night. I don't believe that for a second.
It can happen.
No.
Believe it or not, it can happen.
Sometimes,
okay. Let me tell you something.
Oh, you want me to say it could? You want me to say it could? Would that make you feel better? It could happen.
Do I believe it?
Hell no. Am I clear? Let me bring Jack Nicholson for a few good men into. Are we clear? That's how I feel. I don't believe it. You don't want my answer, don't ask me.
All right, guys.
You don't want my answer, don't ask me.
No, we want it. We got it. The Knicks guys, they're back. Let Stephen A. tell it. The team won their sixth straight game against the Pelicans yesterday, their longest winning streak in 7 years. Wow, seven years.
Yay.
That's sad. But is it something that Zion said that should have Knicks fans most excited? Take a listen, y'all.
I'm glad you asked that, actually. I mean, New York is the mecca of basketball. I love playing here. When I played here in college, and this is my first time playing here in the pros, and I mean this atmosphere, you know, whether they're cheering for you, whether they're booing for you, it's amazing. Honestly, I think outside of New Orleans, obviously, I think this might be my favorite place to play outside of New Orleans. I can't lie to you.
He's so likable, the charismatic, the smile. All right, Max, I'm going to start with you. Do you think Knicks fans should be excited about Zion's comments that it's his favorite city, he would have loved to play there, you know, only second to New Orleans?
Very excited. First of all, in the draft, if you draft him, you know, you don't even know if he's going to hold up physically, whatever. But What winds up happening almost always in smaller markets who have transformational kind of talents is they stay there for 6 years. Because the way the contracts are structured in the NBA, you leave too much money on the table if you bounce before year, like before that you have that 7 years with the team, right? So heading into year seven, after year six, their agent informs the team they're not going to re-sign. You might as well get something for them and trade them to their preferred destination, or else they wait it out and they just sign away. The Greek Freak didn't just do that. But that's the exception, not the rule, in the small market. Shaquille O'Neal. Oh, that's ancient history. What about LeBron James, who is from Akron, right there near Cleveland? He even left. Not a major market. KD, OKC, he left. It's all the same story. It's usually if you have an MVP caliber, all-time great player from a small market, even when they're from there, eventually they're going to leave, and that eventually is usually after 6 years. Either they're going to get traded heading into year seven, or they'll sign away after year seven. So why haven't the Knicks gotten anybody in recent years? And by recent years, I mean decades now. Because no one wanted to play there. You know, but things are changing. Not just that they have a coach who's competitive and a team that's scrappy, but R.J. Barrett, you know, they have young ascending players with friends in the league like Zion Williamson. Of course Knicks fans should be excited. If Zion Williamson is healthy after six seasons in New Orleans, and I'm a Knicks fan, I'm thinking, ooh, we got a real chance to trade for him heading into that year seven. And if he's healthy, by then you figure he's an MVP caliber player. He's already spectacular. Already. And if you have to wait that extra year for him to sign, now you don't have to give up anything for him but the cash. No, it's a really good sign that a young superstar player is saying that. And in particular, this one is saying that about these Knicks. If you're a Knicks fan, you have to be excited.
It's depressing, Max. I was in a good mood until he brought that up. It's depressing. 2019, I'm on the New Jersey Turnpike, Max. I'm driving home, and I'm listening to the draft on TV. And I know that the Knicks, you know, the draft lottery, whatever, you know, the Knicks, you know, I'm hoping those ping pong balls, you know, drop in their favor, and they open the envelope, and you know, they were going to have a chance at Zion. New York Knicks end up with the number 3 overall pick when everybody and their mother knew that Zion was going to be number 1. Ja Morant was going number 2 to Memphis. And we got R.J. Barrett, who, by the way, has been playing nicely. He's starting to hit his 3-point shots. They're going to have to do something with Kevin Knox because Kevin Knox can't really get on the floor ahead of him. But it's just when I think about Zion and him averaging over 26 a game and shooting damn near 60% from the field or around 60% from the field and being the monster that he is, being the human highlight reel that he is, I think about Madison Square Garden and what if he were there. And I knew he wanted to be there. Everybody and their mother knew he wanted to be there. He looked depressed when he saw that New Orleans ended up getting the number 1 overall pick. Okay? He didn't want to be there. He wanted to be in New York. Okay? He wanted to be in the Mecca, but it didn't turn out to be that way. And then two of the most painful moments for me as a Knicks fan, Max Kellerman, was when that happened. All right. And again, I like R.J. Barrett, but he's no Zion. The other was when the New York Knicks had the 8th pick in the 2009 NBA draft. And Steph Curry went number 7. One more slot, and Steph Curry would have been a New York Knicks. Mike D'Antoni was coaching the team. Donnie Walsh was there, and there was no question that the New York Knicks were going to grab Steph Curry.
And you know what?
If he landed there. And instead, they had Jordan Hill.
And you know what, Stephen A.? Steph Curry never said anything like, it's my favorite place to play outside
of
my –
Yeah, I understand that.
But Zion's saying it.
So
he's
what?
Saying it. Let me
so
tell
what,
you something.
They can't have him. They can't have him.
Not yet.
You know,
not
that,
yet.
That's like taking the tiger, right? And you know, and in front of the tiger, you're just throwing out a bunch of steak right in front of him and stuff like that, but he can't reach it.
The Lakers.
We can't reach it.
The Lakers we are can't the get all-time Zion. Team, not only for being the marquee franchise and winning the most and the champions and everything, but for bigs. They never draft a big. They wait to see who's left standing through attrition. Wilt, Kareem, Shaq. Powell, AD, none of those guys were drafted by the Lakers. LeBron wasn't drafted by the Lakers, but the Lakers are a destination. And they want to play in L.A., not just because of the market, because the Clippers never been out of the second round, but because of the Lakers. If the Knicks can start becoming that in New York, then they'll eventually get Zion when he's at the height of his powers.
You make me sick. I can't stand you. You're a traitor. You understand? You departed. You betrayed New Yorkers.
Much
you left and you went to L.A. All right. Oh, so the New York Knicks, who haven't won a title since 1973, suddenly they're a destination spot, right? Even though the Lakers got 17 championships. Listen, Leon Rose has done an exceptional job. James Dolan has stayed out of the way for the most part. World Wide West, William Wesley's doing his thing. Scott Perry's doing his thing. Tom Thibodeau's the Coach of the Year candidate. Julius Randle is an MVP candidate as far as I'm concerned. Doesn't matter. We can't get Zion.
You know what? You're probably right. Lakers would probably get him. You're right.
Stephen A., the first key, it's acceptance. And you know, in life, we all want things to be different than the way we are, but the healing starts with accepting it and just breathe and be in the moment.
Molly, goodbye. Goodbye, Molly.
Sad, though.
You kind of want to hear from a Husky. I don't want to hear.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.